News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Two men accused of hazardous drone operation arrested in the Boston area this weekend. Meanwhile, new information about other reported drones on the East Coast that may involve manned aircraft.
In New Jersey, Senator Andy Kim going out on drone patrol with police Saturday night, tweeting they were almost certainly planes. New York Governor Kathy Hochul saying this has gone too far, and New Jersey officials demanding permission from the federal government to collect at least one of the drones and get to the bottom of the issue.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken says the U.S. has had direct contact with HTS, that's the rebel group which ousted former Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, and word that a cousin of Assad, a former general, has been captured in Syria by rebels. According to Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg, Luigi Mangione, the prime suspect in the killing of UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson, may waive his right to extradition and could be in a New York City courtroom as early as Tuesday. This is ABC News. Another high-profile departure from New York City Mayor Eric Adams' administration.
Ingrid Lewis Martin, chief advisor to Mayor Eric Adams, is resigning. She's advised the mayor since he took office in 2022, overseeing appointments and human resources. Her phone was confiscated by authorities in September in connection with an investigation into how the city leases commercial properties. Mayor Adams himself is set to stand trial next year in a separate federal corruption case. In a statement, Lewis Martin said, "This has been an amazing ride." Mike Dubusky, ABC News.
Former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is said to be on the mend after undergoing hip replacement surgery following a fall while on a trip to Luxembourg. The 84-year-old thanking staff at Germany's Landstuhl Army Base, where she underwent the procedure. Pelosi was in Europe with a congressional delegation to mark the 80th anniversary of the Battle of the Bulge. New study on obesity in America. For the first time in a decade, obesity rates trending down. Dave Packer, ABC News.
Matt Nair on air. This shouldn't be a thing.
Michigan man leads lawnmower chase. I'll stop, says the suspect. Instead, he reaches under the seat and pulls out a gun.
Shoots himself in the hand.
The deputy has his taser trained on him, and yes, he tased him.
I'm not advocating for crime, but boost something that goes faster than cop on foot.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots. And now a speech.
I just want to say that friendship is about heart. Heart and brain. Who's with me?
Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
And my brain is saying, when it's time to go home, somebody call me a ride.
Love that guy.
Me too.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. The Wisconsin Innocence Project is ending the year with some key victories, including helping with the release of two men who each spent decades in prison. But their cases illustrate systemic issues. Judith Ruiz Branch reports.
David Bintz spent 25 years in prison, and Manuel Cucuta spent 27 years in prison. Both were sentenced to life despite glaring holes in their cases. The Wisconsin Innocence Project believed both are innocent. Project co-director Christopher Lau says it speaks to a greater systemic issue that colors most of their cases and reinforces what it was designed to do.
So part of this is just historical, or, you know, the way our policing and incarceration system evolved was from basically their vestiges of slavery, and, you know, we try to keep down historically underrepresented people.
He says while not everyone may adopt those views, there is a lot of pressure to close cases and keep people incarcerated. The U.S. incarcerates more people for longer than any other developed country in the world. Compared with Wisconsin's total population, Black and Native people are overrepresented in the incarcerated population, with Black people incarcerated at a rate 11 times higher than white people. Lau says in order to even begin to think about reform, The U.S. and the state of Wisconsin need to re-examine priorities in funding, as well as rethink the point of doling out such long sentences when it doesn't keep communities safer.
Good arguments that it makes us less safe, but we still keep doing it because it's, I think, one, easy politically, and it's because it's where we put all of our money.
He says regardless of guilt or innocence, there are simply too many people who are incarcerated. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Dense fog advisory tonight, a low around 35. Drizzle and fog for Monday, highs around 40. Monday night, mostly cloudy, a low of 27. Tuesday, partly sunny, highs near 37. Lots of sun for Wednesday and a high near 30. Another chance of snow by Thursday.
It's 39 at our studios.
Dom Selvia.
I'm Jimmy Cuska filling in for Dom Selvia. Coming up Monday, we'll talk gas prices heading into the holidays, and it's not too late to run for local office. We'll tell you how.
The Dom Selvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6. News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin.
For all of Wisconsin.
Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Welcome into Hour 2 of this week's Civic Media Spotlight. We go now to the Earl Ingram Show, where this week Earl welcomed on Major Beverly Gates from the Salvation Army. They chat about the upcoming 35th anniversary of the Christmas Family Feast at the Baird Center on Christmas Day. They dive into detail on who the event is for, how you can get involved, and Earl's connection to the event.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. That's 855-752-4842. And I am honored to have none other than Major Beverly Gates of the Salvation Army. Good morning to you, Major Bates. How are you?
Good morning, Earl. Good morning. I'm doing well. How are you today?
All right. So tell us a little bit about the Salvation Army.
The Salvation Army is, we're in 133 countries around the world. We are in every zip code there is in the state of Wisconsin, and we're here to serve those in our communities.
How long have you been with the Salvation Army?
I've been with the Salvation Army for 40 years.
40 years. My goodness. All that great work helping all those people.
Well, you know, that's the joy of being able to work with the Salvation Army is the opportunity to really help those in our community.
Well, I wanted to invite you because people in this listening audience may not be aware of a wonderful, wonderful event that is getting ready to celebrate 35 years in the city of Milwaukee. It's called the Christmas Family Feast.
Absolutely. Our Christmas Family Feast is a meal on Christmas Day, so December 25th, and it'll be held at the Baird Center down on Wisconsin Street in Milwaukee here. And we serve about 4,000 people that day a Christmas meal and give them an opportunity just to have a place to go on Christmas Day.
You know, it's a Christmas meal with all the trimmings. You know, I used to, you know, even do a live radio broadcast on Christmas Day, I remember, at the Christmas Family Feast. And I can't believe it's 35 years. I used to volunteer working in the kitchen, and there would be 200 turkeys that we would prepare. I mean, to feed 4,000, 5,000 people. is more than a notion, and it takes an army of volunteers. How do you begin to organize that many people for one day?
You know, our volunteer coordinator has been working on this project for a while, gathering the volunteers that will be needed. We have about 400 or so volunteers that will step in during this time to help us, as you said, in the kitchen. So in the prep work, we start prepping on Friday the 20th and start with the cooking, start with the prepping of that. And we continue on until Christmas Day, where we'll be serving, as you said, a feast, consisting of all the good things that you'd have on a regular Christmas meal.
You know, and the meals are so hearty. I mean, everything, you know, not just turkeys. I mean, you've hams, you've got roast beef, you've got everything. And so people may think, well, is this just for homeless people?
You know, this is not just for homeless people. This is for anyone and everyone. If you need a meal, come on down to the Baird Center. It's for everyone. It's for you. It's for your family. It's your friends. We want you to come down and make sure that you have a good meal on Christmas Day.
You know, not to mention you give away an ungodly number of Christmas toys to children. I don't know if you're still doing that, but I know back when I was there, they did. But you've got Christmas carols. You've got everything. Beautiful. So for people who don't know, the Baird Center has been completely a brand new portion of that Baird Center has been built, and it is one of the most beautiful convention centers in the entire country.
You know, the Baird Center is, they have just redone some reconstruction and we'll be in the main ballroom on the main floor there. It's beautiful, decorated for Christmas, and it'll be, with all the tables set up for serving our guests that day, it will be a beautiful place, an opportunity to just come and relax and enjoy yourself.
You know, what I've always been fascinated by when this event takes place. If you're just joining us, I'm joined by Major Beverly Gates. She is with the Salvation Army, and on Christmas Day, the 35th anniversary of the Christmas Family Feast will be taking place at the Baird Center downtown Milwaukee, with over 4,000 people will be fed just an unbelievable Christmas dinner, and with all the trimmings, and just as festivity goes, it's the trees, all the decorations, all of those things put you in the mood.
Absolutely. You know, and it's not just the meal that's going to be there. We've got Santa's going to be coming for the kids. We have some barbers who are going to be coming in and providing haircuts for individuals. We've got a DJ that's going to be playing music. It's going to be a great day together.
You know what I love about it the most is there are people who, you know, don't struggle economically. They live in nice suburbs. Finances aren't an issue with them, but they bring their families.
Mm-hmm.
People
Absolutely.
From all different backgrounds, different religious backgrounds. Everybody comes for the same reason, and it's the spirit that's in that building. And you know, man, really taking the time out to interact with mankind. That's really what that's about.
Right. It really is just a place to feel like you've got a family to come to, just a place to socialize, a place to be with family. I remember last year we had a family come in that was, had hit some hard times, and this was a place for them to sit down as a family and enjoy a meal. You know, so you've got that, and then you've got the the numerous volunteers who are there helping, who are also engaging with those that have come to the meal. So it's a great time together.
You know, it's some would say it's the reason for the season. And when you, and what has always been so amazing to me about it is the structure. Everybody's where they need to be at the right time to make sure that this works. And so to the people who behind the scenes organized this, again, having been one of those people who was a volunteer, I know the kind of work that goes into this. And when somebody says, I'm going to volunteer to do this, as you just stated, starting Friday the 20th, they don't volunteer for a couple of hours. They make this commitment to organizing this and getting this thing together behind the scenes, and then it culminates with the dinner.
Absolutely, yeah. Again, as we're, you know, those, that prep work, it's setting the tables, it's getting the centerpieces on, it's getting the food cooked, it's getting, you know, all of the, because again, it is a feast. We're having ham and turkey and mashed potatoes and yams and vegetables and dessert.
There's
and
everything.
Drink, all of that. Everything there, absolutely. But it's also the decorating and setting up and making sure that everybody's organized. It's making sure that we've got the right people, not only serving the, dishing up the food, but it's serving the food to the individuals, because you're waited on. You're not, you don't have to go through a line.
Right.
We bring it to the table. It's all very opportunity just to enjoy.
So is it too late, Major Gates, if someone would want to volunteer?
No, if they want to volunteer, they can go to smmilwaukee.org and look for the volunteer button, and it will take you to the various opportunities of volunteering, and they can choose the Christmas family feast.
Well, you may not be a person who, you know, is handy in the kitchen, but there are many different aspects of this, and so you shouldn't feel like if you're not, you know, that you burn toast, that you can't be a part of it, right?
Absolutely. I would not be the one in the kitchen either. but, you know, I know how to serve a plate, or I know how to talk to somebody just to encourage. So, yeah, every volunteers are needed in many different areas.
So, again, how can they get in touch with the Salvation Army if they want to volunteer?
SAMilwaukee.org.
So I will be there. I'm going to spend the bulk of Christmas at the family feast volunteering my time.
And, we look forward to seeing you
and
there, Earl.
It's the 35th year anniversary, and so I'm going to look forward to renewing with people that I haven't seen for a number of years, because there are people who are still there. They've been there since the inception.
Absolutely. People who have been doing this for years and people who it's the first time they've ever done it, all coming together to help our community.
Absolutely. Churches and everybody are organized, and all of those people come. So thank you very much, Major Gates. I look forward to talking to you in the future about things that a Salvation Army is engaged in. This is not a one-time connection between you and I.
All right. Thank you, Earl.
Thank you as well. Up next, we're going to be joined by a really good friend, a national radio talk show host, Mr. Jeff Santos, on the Earl Ingram Show.
The Earl Ingram Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 8 till 10. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. This is News from the Center, WRCE.
Do you hear that? Asthma triggers are everywhere, from dust mites, pet dander, and pollen, to smog and smoke. An asthma attack can strike anywhere, anytime. Be prepared with quick-acting Primatene Mist, clinically proven to open airways quickly. It's the number one FDA-approved asthma inhaler available over-the-counter. Primatene Mist. Breathe easy again. Use as directed.
Max Inc. on Civic Media with Mike and Wendy from Sunspot. Can you imagine the mosh pit on the bridge that could happen?
Oh, well, that's how the original series was. When they moved the camera, whenever it's like the red alert. The,
right.
Yeah. That was the mosh pit.
Yeah. And everybody had to like fake like.
Right. Lean left. Great. Lean right.
Yeah.
Join us for all the fun with Max Inc. on Saturday night, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media radio network and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
We take a trip to the farm next up on the Civic Media Spotlight with Matt Nair on air. Jane and Greg discuss a measure passed in Pierce County requiring factory farms to apply for a permit if expanding or moving into the area. This is an important step in holding CAFOs, or concentrated animal feeding operations, accountable for damage they cause to the environment.
Good morning and welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane, Matt Nair, Greg Mock, and Calvin Butenoff coming to you collectively from my dining room and also at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. You can call, you can text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. We have a jam-packed show for you today. The reason I am not there this morning, my husband and I usually leave about the same time in the morning. We both leave about 6:30, but I usually get out about 5 minutes ahead of time. And I've got this rattle on my car. The heat shield is going. Ooh. So it makes noise anyway. But I was about 10 minutes away from home at a stoplight, and I pulled out from the stoplight and thought, this is a very bad sound.
Yes.
This shouldn't be a thing, this sound. And so I pulled over and my rear left tire was completely flat. Completely flat.
Yeah.
So I called my husband. I texted you. We have a little, one of those cigarette lighter inflators.
Yeah.
So I got that hooked up and got it back to full. And my husband was coming. He wanted to follow me home so we could drop it off. There's a repair place that's real close to our house.
Yeah.
So in the 5 minutes it took, maybe 10 minutes it took for him to get to me, it was flat again.
Yep.
So, yeah, I had a lot of fun jumping in and out of the car and filling up the tire and then watching it go flat and then jumping back out and filling it up again. But anyway, I'm here. I'm in one piece.
Hey, that's
the car's dropped off. So hopefully they will be able to fix that mess. There must be like a brick in that tire or something that it would go flat that quickly again.
Well, it sounds like what you have is, you don't have it doesn't sound like puncture. It sounds like you might have a slash on it. I had something similar earlier this year where I was driving and my tire sensors are always off. So it always says, oh, you gotta check your tire pressure. Right. Well, I was driving one day and I just heard this noise. I'm like, well, that doesn't sound normal at all. So I pulled over and there it was. It was just flat as a board.
It's the flapping.
And when they showed me the tire after they replaced it, it was construction where I was driving. It was Walnut down north side of Milwaukee. And it just slashed my tire straight open. So Kringle will wait. Kringle will stay. If you want to keep the Kringle for yourself, I don't mind. I just care that you are happy, healthy, and home safe. That's all I care about.
Well, thanks, you guys. And thank you for being so flexible this morning as I had a really interesting hour and a half until I got back home. So anyway, I think this is a fascinating article, and I would love people to chime in on this if you live in an area that is affected.
Yeah.
The Wisconsin Examiner, Henry Redman, posted this early this morning. And the headline reads, Pierce County Town passes ordinance requiring factory farm permits.
This is great.
So I think it is good.
Yeah.
If I lived in one of these communities, I would be very concerned about this. The town of about 600 people passed an ordinance requiring factory farms to get permits before they can move into or expand in the community. And we've talked before about, they're called CAFOs.
Yes.
And that stands for Concentrated Animal Feeding Operations. Other communities have faced legal challenges to their ordinances. One actually had to rescind its regulation after there was a change in elected leadership. But Pierce County has seen a lot of expansion of factory farms this year. A dairy in the town of Salem announced plans to expand from 1,700 to 6,500 cows.
Oh, my God.
That seems pretty massive.
That's
to
a
me.
Huge increase.
Right?
Yeah.
From 1,700 to 6,500 cows. And all of that manure has to go somewhere.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. And there's sometimes not plans for that manure and that, and how those expanding farms will impact the environmental, the environment of the way, where they're in. And Pierce County is not a big county. There's not a lot of people there.
Once they get an application, the ordinance requires the board to send a letter to all of the residents within a 3-mile radius of this proposed CAFO. The board can then grant or deny the license. If it's granted, they can impose conditions on how the CAFO has to operate. In the board's materials about the ordinance, it highlighted enforcement mechanisms that state regulations around CAFOs in the state largely rely on self-reporting to DNR.
Yeah.
Okay.
Self-reporting. You're on your best behavior.
Yeah.
No, sorry.
A fact sheet about the ordinance says our town is blessed with a stunning mix of farmland, woods, and bluffs overlooking the Mississippi River's Lake Pepin. Rush River is a class one trout fishing destination fed by cool spring-fed streams. Everyone has private wells for human and animal consumption. CAFOs with thousands of animals, and again, they're talking about going from 1,700 to 6,500, will bring thousands of truckloads of waste into the town. State and county laws have almost no control over these huge facilities. Without an ordinance, their impact on roads, wells, health, and the economy are unknown. This is already a problem. We already have water issues.
We've talked about CAFOs in the past, about the fact that this is sort of going under the radar and being, and even said in the article that depending on the leadership you have, it's whether or not these can go through. And I honestly, I'm very proud of Pierce County for doing this. This is a great thing to secure the health of their environment, the health of their people, and really like kind of, I think it'd be easy in this political climate to say like, oh, we can't do this because of business and we can't. No, the people are like, this is more important. We are more important and we need to know what your plan is for our county.
And certainly I know farmers struggle. We talk about this all the time. It's a very, very difficult to be a dairy farmer, to be any kind of farmer has innumerable challenges.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you are part of this community.
Yes. Yeah. You are using
and have some obligations to your community.
Absolutely. And reporting on how you are going to treat the ground and treat the environment, I don't think is going beyond any sort of measure. I think that's perfectly normal. That should be acceptable and the normal. All of them should have to be doing this. If you want to open a business, you have to give an economic impact or environmental impact. Should be the same with all farms.
Yeah, definitely. If you are affected, if you are in a community that is dealing with this, we would love to hear from you. 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching in the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday mornings from 10 till noon. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. News from the Center, WRCE.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Two men accused of hazardous drone operation arrested in the Boston area this weekend. Meanwhile, new information about other reported drones on the East Coast that may involve manned aircraft.
In New Jersey, Senator Andy Kim going out on drone patrol with police Saturday night, tweeting they were almost certainly planes. New York Governor Kathy Hochul saying this has gone too far, and New Jersey officials demanding permission from the federal government to collect at least one of the drones and get to the bottom of the issue.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken says the U.S. has had direct contact with HTS, that's the rebel group which ousted former Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, and word that a cousin of Assad, a former general, has been captured in Syria by rebels. According to Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg, Luigi Mangione, the prime suspect in the killing of UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson, may waive his right to extradition and could be in a New York City courtroom as early as Tuesday. This is ABC News.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
It's the Packers and the Seahawks. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. NFL Sunday Night Football. The Packers and the Seahawks tonight in Seattle. I asked Packers safety Xavier McKinney if he's ever faced quarterback Geno Smith at Lumen Field.
Yeah, I've gone against him before, you know, regardless of, you know, the things that they've been through. And even in his career, he's been through a lot of things and still been able to overcome a lot.
College basketball, a shocker. Number 6 ranked Marquette losing to Dayton, 71-63. The Badgers snapped their 3-game losing streak with a win over the Butler Bulldogs 83-74. At the NBA Cup in Vegas, the Bucks are headed to the finals after beating the Hawks 110-102. Giannis with 32 points. Damian Lillard added 25.
You out there with a guy like Giannis who's going to draw a lot of attention when he's getting downhill. So it's really no reason for me to force the action. You know, it came back around.
The Bucks face the Thunder Tuesday night in the finals. Game time 7:30. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Dense fog advisory tonight, a low around 35. Drizzle and fog for Monday, highs around 40. Monday night, mostly cloudy, a low of 27. Tuesday, partly sunny, highs near 37. Lots of sun for Wednesday and a high near 30. Another chance of snow by Thursday.
It's 39 at our studios.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. We reported recently on the impact of Shelby County versus Holder, the U.S. Supreme Court's decision invalidating Section 5 of the 1965 Voting Rights Act. Anticipating even more erosion of the VRA, some states have passed their own state VRAs. It's not only the dismantling of Section 5, the preclearance requirements for states with a history of discrimination. The conservative justices also made proving racial gerrymandering harder under Section 2, and they've made it easier for a state legislature to dilute minority voting power. And in the lower courts, more cases attempting to keep individual voters from bringing voting rights lawsuits under the VRA are pending. With dwindling protections from the federal government, California, Washington, Oregon, Virginia, New York, Connecticut, and Minnesota have enacted state VRAs. Michigan, Maryland, New Jersey, and Florida have efforts underway. The NAACP Legal Defense Fund recommends that state VRAs should have pre-clearance requirements for municipalities which have patterns of discrimination. Rules should include a prohibition against vote denial or dilution through gerrymandering, strong protections against intimidation or deception, language assistance, a statewide database to make evidence-based decisions on election administration, and a directive to the state judiciary to support pro-voter and pro-democracy decisions. We have the recommendations at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
when the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
The scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
I'll face a hurricane without meds. Now that's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Earl Ingram.
Join me next time for Motown Monday. We'll start the countdown to the holidays, react to the news from the weekend, and end the show with the politrickster of the day. Don't miss it.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 till 10.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Civic Media Spotlight. We take a trip up north next as we listen to Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Pat welcomed on Dan Rossmiller this week, a man who literally helped write the book on how to run for school board. They discuss how the community can get involved with their local public school, as well as what makes for a caring and effective school board member.
Time for our Wednesday homeroom segment, talking about public education, the opportunities and the obstacles along the way. Here's an opportunity for you. Your local school board needs you more than ever, given the political environment out there. Every school board benefits when it has some of your hometown's best advocates there, advocating on behalf of the education of our kids, not some other political ideology. It doesn't mean everybody on a school board has to march in lockstep, but should be, shall we say, a bit more service-oriented and education-oriented. And so we thought, well, where can we learn more about the qualities of a good school board candidate and also how to run for school board or help somebody else run for school board? And we found somebody who kind of literally wrote the book on being a school board candidate, along with other colleagues and advocates through the Wisconsin Association of School Boards. And from the Wisconsin Association of School Boards, joining us now is Daniel Rossmiller, the executive director for WASB. Daniel, thank you so much for being here. Nice to see you.
Thank you for having me, Pat. I'm delighted to be on your program.
Well, we're, again, thrilled to have you here and thrilled that somebody has done, again, those of us who've run for office and those who have either thought about it or had a friend who does, would always love to have a resource as the type that you've written up over at WASB, the Guide for Candidates 2025 Spring Election Edition. Can you tell us kind of what prompted the need for a resource like this? What was essentially the mission statement in putting this kind of a document together?
Yeah, well, school boards function best when they represent local communities and have as wide a representation as possible. In past years, it has sometimes been difficult or challenging to find candidates to run for the school board. And so we put this together in hopes that it would encourage people who may be thinking about running but don't know much about the how-to of actually putting together a campaign for school board.
And so in doing that, again, we'll talk about some of the resources involved in it in just a moment here, but I was especially taken that, you know, right near the top after the welcomes, before we get into the X's and O's, it's all about the qualities of a school board member. And again, you know, and anybody, you know, who can run for office can run for school board, but to be one that is particularly, you know, useful and service oriented should have certain qualities. Can you talk a bit about those qualities that you outline in the manual?
Yeah, I think the main quality is to care about our young people and to put student achievement and student learning at the center of their focus. Historically, school board offices are nonpartisan, which means that candidates do not run as a member of a political party. Just a second here. I lost my
link. Lost your place on there?
No, I had another window open up on my computer. I apologize for that.
I have that happen all the time. No worries.
Yep. So the focus should be on high character, high quality individuals who will put the interests of all children and all families ahead of whatever other things may motivate them. We want people who are community minded and who are willing to work together. The power of the school board is not in the individual members of the school board, although their ability to function with others is critical. School boards really only have powers when they meet in together in a duly noticed meeting and take up items that are on the agenda and operate by a majority vote of a quorum that's present. So the school board is a corporate body. The individual members of the school board do not have the full powers of or the powers of the full school board. It's really the acting together that school board members can make a difference.
It's kind of essentially being you know, we always talk in corporate America about, you know, being mission driven rather than margin driven, you know, operating just for profits and shareholder prices. And there is a lot to be said about being good stewards of tax dollars, but to be truly mission driven gets what you just said about working together to advance the best interests of the school district and the education going in there. And, you know, do you feel like that is something that enough candidates keep in mind, or is it something that's worth repeating to candidates about focusing more on the mission than, you know, just the dollars and cents of any given budget?
Well, I think that being careful stewards of the resources that schools are provided with by the public is important. School boards occupy a unique space and have a unique function in our society. They represent the interests of the taxpayers, certainly, but they also represent the interests of the students, most of whom are not 18 years of age, and most of them don't have a voice in elections. So the school boards wear hats, a number of hats, in terms of representing both the community, the values and interests and priorities of the community, the students, making sure that they have the best education possible and can maximize their potential, and then representing accountability from the standpoint of determining what the values, what the priorities, what the goals of the school district are, and then leaving the how to accomplish that to the administration, but providing careful oversight.
There are in the guide that you can find at the WASB website, which is WASB.org for Wisconsin Association of School Boards.org. There are notes about the legal qualifications for being a board member. There are also potential conflicts of interest to consider that might be private interest in public contracts. There's a code of ethics, the incompatibility to be in office, be able to invest the time. But assuming that you get through that page, and again, you see that this is something that you're qualified to do and want to do, then we get to the election procedures for the office of a school board member. And so to put it in plain English, Dan, if somebody is thinking about running for school board yet this coming April, it's not too late, but you need to get going on some stuff right now. What should a potential candidate be doing right now?
I think the first thing that they should do is contact their school district, find out what the specific requirements are in their district. We have several different types of school districts in the state. We have they're organized a little bit differently. So to find out what is necessary, for example, whether nomination papers are necessary, contact the school district office, contact the administrator of the district, and their administrative assistant will be involved in that, will have the information that's available. There is a filing deadline coming up. It's always the first Tuesday in January, and this year that falls on January 7th. So to run for a school board, an interested candidate will need to file a declaration of candidacy. That is a document that has to be notarized. So there's that extra consideration. They also have to file a campaign registration statement, which is related to campaign finances, which are tracked and reports have to be filed. And then in some districts, there is a requirement that candidates file nomination papers as a means of assuring that they have support within the community for their candidacy. And those papers all have to be filed by 5 p.m. on Tuesday, January 7th.
And we should note that school board races were once fairly quiet affairs, but that in some districts we've certainly seen in some of our cities that these races are attracting outside interest, outside groups, potentially outside spending. And so that is the reason why that these forms are necessary to, again, make sure people understand the rules that come with fundraising, that they abide by ethics rules. And that while that may sound daunting, it's simply the rules of the road. And for folks that, aren't necessarily looking to run million-dollar campaigns, God, I hope that's all of them, these are not undue burdens that have to be done by January 7th. Now, in any given seat, what is the rule on whether there needs to be a primary election in February versus just the general election on April 1st?
Well, this gets a little complicated, but in general, school board members are elected from the district as a whole. So in other words, everyone who is an elector of the district has the opportunity to vote for school board. In certain districts, particularly those where a consolidation has occurred, very often you'll have geographically apportioned seats where the person running will have to reside within a particular geographic area. But again, all of the electors of the district will vote for that person. There are a limited number of districts. Madison is one of them, where candidates run for numbered seats so that they run against whoever is either the incumbent or who has filed to run in that particular numbered seat, whether it's 1, 2, 3, 4, et cetera. So that's something you'll want to check with the administrative assistant in your district office. They should also be able to provide you with a copy of this document you referred to, the guide for candidates. It's something that's downloadable from our website, but I believe you probably the best way to find it is by talking to the administrative assistant in your school district administrator's office.
Yeah, and again, you can also see it for WASB.org. WASB.org has that listed there as well. And so when you talk about the responsibilities, and we've covered some of them, but it's just, again, to make sure that folks understand there's a school board member wears a lot of hats. There's student achievement. There's making policy for the district. There's responsibility for the budget. There's communicating with the public. There's advocacy. But in all of your experience, Dan, through the Wisconsin Association of School Boards, tell me more about the first time school board members that you've encountered. And I'm wondering if the main story arc here is that folks get there, it seems rather daunting, but the whole reason people sometimes serve second and third terms is the satisfaction that they get out of it once they learn more about the exact role and the importance that they play in their school district. Is that your experience?
Yeah, very much so. We hold what we call new board member gatherings every spring, typically the third week in April. After the April election, which this year will be on April 1st, no joke, school board members are sworn in on the fourth Monday of the month. So we hold new board member gatherings in each of the 15 regions we've designated in the state. And at those meetings, we allow the newly elected board members to introduce themselves. And I found that almost without exception, they run because they care about student learning and put students at the focus of their attention. These are evening meetings. We go through all of the basic things that school board members need to know to be effective from day one in their positions. There's time for question and answer. We invite veteran school board members and superintendents to come along with them. Very often a board president will bring their board members to that meeting, and we have a good conversation about being on the school board. We talk about the open meetings law. We talk about the public records law. We talk about how things get done, how things get on the agenda for school board meetings. So it's a very comprehensive meeting and curriculum. In addition, a lot of school districts will have their own onboarding process. I would encourage anyone interested in running for school board to take the opportunity to attend school board meetings or watch the meetings. Very often they're streamed live over the internet, or perhaps a local public access cable will have them on the air. Get to know a little bit about that. If you do get elected, talk to the district administrator. Get a preview of what kinds of things are on the agenda.
Yeah, just no shortage of resources for the nearly 2,800 school board members who make decisions affecting more than 800,000 Wisconsin children enrolled in some 421 public school districts. And Dan Rossmiller has been an immense resource for all of this in running for office. Dan, thank you so much. We appreciate the visit.
Thank you very much, Pat.
All right. You have a great day. And when we come back, we'll talk to Todd Alba from The Todd Alba Show.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow is affiliated with the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. This is News from the Center, WRCE.
My part-time service in the Army National Guard makes it possible for me to be more for the community I call home. My training helps me at work when I lead by example. My service in the Army National Guard allows me to keep my community and those I care about safe from threats. Learn more about how you too can live and serve part-time close to home by visiting NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard, aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
Ho-ho, the holidays are here, and it's time to pick a present from the grown-up gift list with Civic Media's statewide text-to-win contest. Listen while you work for the keywords to text for your chance to win $100 cash, an overnight vacation at Chula Vista Resort, and be entered to win one of the grand prizes, a robot vacuum, new luggage, humidifier, espresso machine, and more on the grown-up gift list at civicmedia.us. Just download the Civic Media app and listen weekdays at 7, 11, 1, and 4 for your chance to win in the statewide contest. Ho-ho-ho!
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Wrapping up the spotlight for this week, we take a trip down to Madison for the John and Gordy Show. John, Gordy, their boss Catherine, and their producer Sam, myself, have a heated debate over the city's decision to lower the speed limit on residential streets to 20 miles an hour.
Let's forget about politics completely now.
Oh, please.
I am done. I am done. We're going to protest the city. The city thinks that they're going to put 20 miles per hour speed limits in residential areas. My ass are going to do that. That is the end.
What do you mean? The end, man.
I'm moving out. This is it. I'm moving to another city. I can't handle it here anymore.
Live in Middleton. What do you say?
Well, yeah, that's right.
The Common Council approved the change following a successful implementation of the 20 is Plenty program in two trial neighborhoods.
Well, that's catchy. 20 is Plenty. Oh, now I'm sold on it. Yeah, I'm a sucker. Yeah, well, I'll go with
that. What's their measure of success exactly?
Well, Madison is joining other progressive cities across the country, including Minneapolis, New York City, Portland, and Seattle. They've done this. They've lowered the speed limits on local streets. The research is clear. It's safer for residents, makes neighborhoods more livable. 20 miles per hour is plenty on our local streets, says Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway. That's a quote from her.
That's wrong.
What do you mean?
The whole thing is wrong. You don't do that. No, it isn't common sense.
It is. It is. Pedestrian fatalities in the U.S. have increased 84%.
In the U.S.?
From 2000.
Not Madison. What the hell are they doing 20 miles?
We're part of the United States, last time I checked.
God.
It's been increasing. Pedestrian fatalities from 2009 to 2022 increased 84%.
So I found this story on the Madison subreddit over the weekend.
Yeah.
And
there were just tons of people commenting about how they hated this story. Yeah. One of them said, "What happened in 2009? The iPhone came out. Everyone is on their phones these days, well, and that's probably one of the large reasons why pedestrian fatalities has gone up."
Yeah, it's nothing to do with the speed limit.
I am all for trying to make the roads safer, but the speed limits on city streets, lowering them, doesn't inherently make them safer, because if a road is designed where it feels fine to drive at, say, 45 miles an hour, and you're speed limit is 35 miles an hour, that doesn't mean people are going to drive 35 miles an hour. They're going to drive however fast it feels like the road is safe.
There it is, folks. That's the wisdom of Generation Z right there.
Well, that's why Madison is offering 20 is plenty yard signs to everybody.
I'm putting three of them in my yard.
In multiple languages, and they're free of charge.
20 is plenty.
To residents.
20 is plenty.
No,
20
get out of here. Oh, my God.
They have speed bumps all over. Well, there's speed bumps all over the place.
Well, there are, sure.
So,
you go slow there, but then you speed on me. Look, I think.
What is wrong with you?
In between the speed bumps.
I think Sam Gensy in there spoke wisdom just a few moments ago.
What?
That these roads. Walking in the room at the same time. He can't drive over the speed limit.
These roads are designed for certain speeds.
They're not.
Now they're going to artificially lower the speed limit on streets that were designed for 35 and 40 miles per hour.
None of you guys live downtown. I live right downtown by the Capitol, East Washington. It's a long straight road right up to the Capitol.
Yes.
There's people all night long, not exactly drag racing, but just going zooming down that road because I can hear them. The speed limit on that road is either 25 or 30, depending upon where you're at.
Right.
Yep.
There are some people that go that speed, and then there's a couple people that go way faster than that. And they're the ones that are causing problems. If you have a speed limit that's a certain speed, and then there's a couple people who just completely disregard it, I think it's more of an issue than if you had a higher speed limit overall.
Okay, it's usually 20 in a school zone.
Right.
During school.
Yes.
Have you ever driven 20 miles per hour?
Yes. Because I want to see the baby.
It's like you're not even accelerating. You might as well just let it idle.
Scoot by.
Oh, my God.
Look at the babies coming out of the school.
Well, the Madison Police Department will be out writing tickets all holiday season.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing.
I want to make
Merry Christmas,
Madison. But you live in Middleton. What's the problem? You can go as fast as you want in Middleton.
No, they already lowered the speed limit in Middleton.
I want to say that you're going to come up with a $300 bill.
I'll tell you what.
For the whole holiday.
People in Middleton almost moved out of Middleton because they lowered the speed limit to 30 miles per hour on University Avenue. And that sucks. So I can't imagine 20. I honestly cannot wrap my head around 20.
You're such a bad boy.
How fast is it by your house, the speed limit? What is the speed limit by your place?
It's 30.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah? Are people going 30?
That's too slow.
Really? You'd rather have them speeding 40, 45, 50 by your place?
I live in a very popular street there next to the Beltline.
Yes.
And they're thinking about putting speed bumps in front of my damn house. It's like revenge. We know John lives there and he hates people that go slow. So they're going to put speed bumps in front of my house.
Oh, everybody knows where you live in your neighborhood. Okay. Well, we'll see how that goes. All right.
I just, this is wrong. This is wrong. Okay. So wrong. I can't stand it. And they come up with a clever little way to
20
describe it.
20
and then
is
all of a sudden,
that's
whoa, that's great. That sounds so good and logical. I'm just going to go along with all this stupidity.
So you're not putting a 20 is plenty yard sign in your yard, right?
I'm going to have 20 is too slow signs. All
go
over
faster.
The neighborhood.
Go faster.
That's right.
Okay.
Oh, God.
All right.
What a mess. All right. Well, this town is going to slow down to a point where we might as well live in a gigantic city because it'll take that long to get across town.
Okay.
Says, God, you guys need a new morning show. Guys.
See? See what you did there?
I know.
Okay. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning, 6 a.m., bright and early. Have a great day.
It's the John Gordy Show.
The John and Gordy Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WMDX weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn news from the center, WRCE. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we talk about news deserts and what that means to our politics. We'll wrap it all up with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. I hope you can join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
There was a time when barbecue was perfect. A strong, reliable flavor that could be counted on. But then big manufacturers decided that barbecue needed to be zesty or spicy or sweeter or whatever. If you miss the good old days of great tasting barbecue, we'd like to introduce you to Grandpa's Barbecue. Made in small batches from Grandpa's original recipe. Buy yours online today at grandpasbarbecueshop.com.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network. This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. Lawmakers in Washington and local and state officials calling on federal agencies to find out more about who's flying what some claim are a lot of drones, especially at night in various areas. ABC's Jacqueline Lee.
In New Jersey, Senator Andy Kim going out on drone patrol with police Saturday night, tweeting they were almost certainly planes. New York Governor Kathy Hochul saying this has gone too far, and New Jersey officials demanding permission from the federal government to collect at least one of the drones and get to the bottom of the issue.
Two men arrested in the Boston area this weekend are accused of flying a drone dangerously close to Logan International Airport. A third person got away in a boat, they say. Cleanup underway in Northern California after a rare December tornado, flipping cars, pulling out trees, damaging buildings north of Santa Cruz yesterday. Several injuries. In churches across Syria, Christians marking the first Sunday services since the collapse of the Assad regime. This is ABC News.